Today is a special occasion, as we know. It is the appearance day of His Divine Grace, Om Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Sri Prabhupada, spiritual master of our own ISKCON founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Sri Prabhupada. Today is also the disappearance day of Purushottam Das Thakur. And Gaur Govinda Maharaj will have a program later, so I won't be speaking. I also don't have so much association with him. No association. So I can't speak with any authority. But I thought it would be nice to read a few excerpts. First we'll begin from Srila Prabhupada's books. In Chaitanya Charitamritam, there is at least one reference about Purushottam Thakur. He was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda and considered one of the 12 Gopalas. Lord Nityananda's devotees, 12 of them are especially significant. They're called Gopalas, cowherd boys. And among those cowherd boys, one of them is Stoka Krishna in Krishna Lila. This devotee took birth in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes as the associate of Nityananda known as Purushottam Thakur. But he and his father, the whole family actually, they're mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is Adi Lila, chapter 11. Which is dealing with the branches of the Nityananda branches of the Chaitanya tree. So Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami writes in this connection. Sri Sadashiva Kaviraja Bada Mahashay. Sri Purushottam Dasa Taharatane. The 23rd and 24th prominent devotees of Nityananda Prabhu were Sadashiva Kaviraj and his son Purushottam Das, who was the 10th Gopala. Ajanma Nimagna Nityanandera Charane Nirantara Balya Lila Kare Krishna Sange. Since birth, Purushottam Das was merged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, and he always engaged in childish play with Lord Krishna. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Sadashiva Kaviraj and Nagara Purushottam, who were father and son, are described in the Chaitanya Bhagavata as Mahabhagyavan, greatly fortunate. They belonged to the Vaidya caste of physicians. The Gaur-Gaon Desh Deepika, verse 156, says that Chandravali, a most beloved gopi of Krishna, later took birth as Sadashiva Kaviraj. It is said that Kangsari Sen, the father of Sadashiva Kaviraj, was formerly the gopi named Ratnavali, in Krishna's pastimes. All the family members of Sadashiva Kaviraj were great devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Purushottam Das Thakur sometimes lived at Sukhsagar near Chakadaha in the and Shimulari railway stations. All the deities installed by Purushottam Thakur were formerly situated in Belalanga Gram. But when the temple was destroyed, the deities were brought to Sukhsagar. When that temple merged in the bed of the Ganges, the deities were brought with Janhava Mata's deity to Sahibar Danga, Beri Gram. Since that place also has been destroyed, all the deities are now situated in the village named Chandurigam, which is situated 1 mile up from Palapala. And it goes on. Sri Kanu Thakur, a very respectable gentleman, was the son of Purushottam Das Thakur. He was such a great devotee that Lord Krishna always lived in his body. That is the only reference that I have about Purushottam Das Thakur. He's known by various names, as you've guessed by now. Purushottam Nagar is one of them. He was the son of Sadashiva. He was a cowherd boy in Krishna's pastimes. The majority of today's class, I think we're going to speak about Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur from this very well-researched book from His Holiness Bhaktivikas Swami, Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, 3 volumes, exhaustively details the life and the preaching of His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, it's not very easy to pick representative samples that illustrate his character, his life, his preaching. So I just am going to read pretty much at random. But today is his appearance, so at least we'll begin with that. In chapter 1, it says, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada appeared in this world at 3:30 p.m. on the 6th of February, 1874, the 5th day of the dark lunar fortnight in the month of Govinda of the Gaudiya Vaishnava calendar, corresponding to the Bengali month of Magh. He appeared in Puri, the site of the famous temple of Lord Jagannath, and thus one of the holy places in India, where Lord Chaitanya had resided for 18 years, absorbed in the highest ecstasies of Krishna consciousness. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's advent at Puri is particularly significant in light of a statement of the Padma Purana. Sri Brahma Rudrasanaka Vaishnavaha Kshitipavanaha Chatwaraste Kalau Bhavya Hyutkale Purushottamat. That means, in the Kali Yuga, the 4 Vaishnava Sampradayas, which are purifiers of the earth, will appear in Purushottam Kshetra. He appeared in his parents' rented home, which, due to their being pure Vaishnavas, continually reverberated with Sankirtana. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's father was the Palmari Vaishnava Acharya Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, known in secular circles as Sri Kedarnath Datta. As an ideal Acharya in the Grihastha Ashram, he oversaw an extensive family and discharged important responsibilities as a senior government officer, yet was still prodigiously active in Krishna's service. The boy was the 6th child in a family of 13, the 4th of 8 sons, and 3rd by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's 2nd wife, Srimati Bhagavati. There's a footnote here. In 1850, at age 11, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was married to 5-year-old Sayamani. He was 11, she was 5, for your information. In 1860, which means she was 15, She bore a son named Annada Prasad. But 10 months later, she died. Soon thereafter, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur married Bhagavati Devi, whose first son expired in 1868, when just 1 month old. Srimati Bhagavati Devi subsequently delivered 8 sons, Radhika Prasad, Kamala Prasad, Bimala Prasad, Bharata Prasad, Birija Prasad, and Lalita Prasad, and Sailaja Prasad. He also gave birth to 5 daughters, Saudamini, Kadambini, Krishna Vinodini, Shyama Sarojini, and Hari Pramodini. So Bimala Prasad Datta later became Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Actually, it's written here that traditionally high-class Indian families remained an oral record of their lineage going back to Lord Brahma, the first created being in the universe. Raise your hand if you know your family history all the way back to Lord Brahma. And it details each generation. Okay, so Bimala Prasad was 5 months old at the time of Lord Jagannath's Rath Yatra, an annual festival attracting lakhs of pilgrims. His father's house was situated along the parade route on Grand Road. Although the procession usually finishes in a few hours, this time Lord Jagannath's cart stopped for 3 days outside the home of his dear devotee, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. During that period, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur arranged for a continuous Sankirtana festival for the pleasure of Lord Jagannath. Taking advantage of the auspicious opportunity, he directed his wife to bring her baby to the cart. Upon being placed at the lotus feet of Jagannath, the infant reached out his tiny arms to touch the feet of the deity. Lord Jagannath immediately reciprocated by offering his own garland, which fell from his body and encircled the child. That same day, Bimala Prasad's Annaprashana was conducted with Jagannath Mahaprasadam. That's the festival to celebrate when the child takes grains for the first times. Also performed was the traditional ceremony of placing the baby amid various objects with such as rice paddy, money, and scriptures to see which one he will clasp as indicative of his future vocational propensity. The child's spontaneous grasping of Srimad Bhagavatam further intimated his devotional inclination. From this wonderful happening on Lord Jagannath's cart, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur realized that this child was Lord Chaitanya's answer to his prayer for an empowered soul to help in his mission. He thus resolved to specially care for this son, and from the beginning trained him in pure devotional service. All parents can take note of this. Very serious responsibility. Okay, I'm going to skip ahead now because there are 3 volumes and each of them is at least some 500 pages long, so there's no way we can cover everything. But a few things that are notable. Despite being schooled alongside the fashionable and well-to-do, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was never inclined to explore the delights of the world. Throughout his life, he never engaged in any kind of sensuousness. Yet he did not shun society. Dressed like a typical young sophisticate, in spotless white dhoti, with a white Punjabi or other garment fully covering his upper body, and in winter also a chadar, he mingled with students, Englishmen, and other well-informed gentlemen in Beaton Square, that's adjacent to Bhakti Bhavan in Kolkata. and other parks of Kolkata, and during school recesses, informally discussed with them about religion, politics, current affairs, and similar topics. In this period, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati began writing essays on spiritual topics for various magazines. He was only a student at this time, whereby he became known for his virulent condemnation of malpractices in the name of religion. And to help his school companions lead an exemplary life, he formed a society named Chirakumar Sabha, that is to say, the Association of Lifelong Bachelors, also called August Assembly, whose members took a vow of celibacy. Do we find that in colleges today? This is only 100 years ago. Something to think about. So they took a vow of celibacy, all the members of this August Assembly, intending to avoid entanglement in family affairs. However, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was the lone member to maintain the pledge throughout his life. He was Naishthiki Brahmachari. During school holidays, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati studied the Vedas under Pandit Prithvishwara Sharma, who also tutored him in the grammatical work Siddhanta Kaumudi. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati went through the entire grammar in 3 months, covering the section on Santi in 3 days. Santi means the way that Sanskrit words join together. It's a hassle, and you have to learn it first. So he did that, but it only took him 3 days. Pandit Sharma cautioned him, "You should not finish the perusal of Sandhi so quickly. It took me a long time." In Banadas, scholars go through Panini's grammar during their whole life. Whoever continuously studies Panini attains liberation upon dying. This is what the Pandit told him. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati replied, "Then from today I reject you. The goal of my life is neither mastery of grammar nor liberation, but worship of Hari and attaining his affection. I have studied the Vedas, the branches of the Vedas, and their connate parts, only in a secondary manner." We can get an indication of his personality. Sometimes he would argue with his teachers on mundane subjects in school. But when Sri Siddhanta Saraswati tangled directly with the college principal, he became obliged to quit college. It was 1895, and although in that era such an act was practically unheard of and deemed disgraceful, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati had another outlook. Quote, "Considering that if I were to remain studying diligently at college, I would be browbeaten to enter family life. But if I were perceived as a foolish good-for-nothing, then no one would put such an inducement upon me for becoming engaged in worldly advancement. I left the Sanskrit college. And to maintain my life for service to Hari, I sought an honest occupation with a modest income." What did he do? Does anyone know? He did a few things. He was Sri Sri Gaurav Nitai, Sri Sri Krishna Balaram, Sri Sri Lalita Vishakha Sahitaradha Shyam Sundar Ki Jai. So he was an astrologer, among other things he did. Now there's an interesting section about how he found his guru and accepted initiation. Although many reputed gurus were desirous to count Sri Siddhanta Saraswati as their own, he detected their insincerity, spurned their wooing, and stood opposed to them. Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur had been his Shiksha Guru from birth and had given him Harinam and mantras for worshipping Sri Narasimhadeva and Sri Kurmadeva. Yet, so that Sri Siddhanta Saraswati could attain additional spiritual shelter, guidance, and inspiration for his future colossal service, Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur sent him to Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji for further initiation. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was decidedly aristocratic, intellectual, and of exemplary virtuous deportment, whereas by external consideration, Babaji Maharaj was illiterate, cranky, and crude. Now, there's a footnote here that it was generally accepted that Babaji Maharaj could not even sign his own name. That was not uncommon in those days when the oral tradition was emphasized over all else. Indeed, he was reputed to vehemently refuse persons who approached him for diksha, even sometimes beating them with an umbrella. This is Gaurakishore Das Babaji. He lived for some time in an overturned boat on the bank of the Ganga, and he dressed for some time in clothes that were taken off of corpses, kafan. So, not very easy to deal with Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, who was completely transcendental and beyond this material world. But Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was determined to accept this person as his guru on the advice of his father, Srila Bhaktivinod. But Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj rejected him when he first approached him for this purpose. He said, "I once accepted a disciple, but he cheated me and went away. I'll not make any further disciples." But Sri Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not easily discouraged and again begged for mercy. Babaji responded, "I will ask Mahaprabhu. If he gives permission, your request will be granted." When after a few days, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati returned and inquired, "What was Mahaprabhu's order?" Babaji Maharaj replied, "I forgot to ask." And when Sri Siddhanta Saraswati came for a third time, he was directly refused. "I asked," Babaji Maharaj said, "but I did not receive the command of Mahaprabhu." Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was devastated. He stood up and uttered, "Karuna na hele kahatiya kahatiya, prana na rakhiboar." Everyone knows this song from his father wrote this song. "Without your mercy, weeping and weeping, I will no longer maintain my life." Sri Siddhanta Saraswati resolved that however many times he might be refused, no further would he rotate in this world without getting Babaji Maharaj's grace. Seeing this young aspirant's genuine desire and commitment, Babaji Maharaj relented. He told Sri Siddhanta Saraswati to bathe in the nearby Saraswati, that's a tributary of the Ganga, and then return, after which he accepted him as a disciple. This was in January 1900. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati later reflected on this incident. This is in his own words. "When out of false ego, I was thinking, quote, I am a great scholar of mathematics and philosophy. Let any big pundit come any time, day or night, and I will cut his propositions to pieces," end quote. He was famed for this. He was no doubt capable of doing it. "At that time, I got the darshan of the lotus feet of Sri Gurudeva. He ignored everything that was previously appreciated in me, my truthfulness, my moral and pious life, and my intellectualism, knowing them to be of little value. When I saw that he ignored whatever was good in me, I realized how good he himself must be, who could neglect so many good qualities in me. What inconceivable wealth he possessed. Being neglected by him, I understood that there was no one more fallen and contemptible than myself. That was my actual identity. The very things that I had judged desiderata, such as scholarship and upright character, this exalted soul regarded as valueless. I apprehended that within myself, this noble personality possessed, within himself, this noble personality possessed priceless treasure. I then pondered that either he is extremely puffed up or is exceedingly merciful. I then haughtily said to my Gurudev, "You are a worshipper of that cheater and debauch, Krishna. So why would you be compassionate to someone like me, dedicated to ordinary morality?" Humbly and sincerely, I prayed to the Supreme Lord for his mercy. Later, by his grace, I recognized that without receiving the blessings of this peerless saint, and without serving him, nothing good could happen to me. When I accepted that, and acted accordingly, and then received the causeless mercy, unlimited grace of my Sri Gurudev and refuge at his lotus feet, I deemed my life fulfilled. I had considered my Gurudev to be unequaled in Vairagya, but someone short of learning. But he reduced to powder my audacity born of book learning. With the mallet of his mercy, he revealed that whatever I had adjudged to be the highest ideal was in fact most low and despicable. When by his grace that instruction first entered my ears, my diminutive brain lacked the capacity to accommodate such transcendental knowledge. But to all fools like me, he gave the chance to hear such lofty topics. I have understood that if the people of this world do not receive the same jolt that I received from my Gurudev, then their consciousness will not awaken. Therefore, I'm telling everyone, I am more foolish than anyone else on earth. Please, all of you, do not be foolish like me. Do not live your life within the limitation of calculating consciousness. Discuss Vaikuntha Katha, and you will become a great person. I'm telling you what I have realized to be supremely beneficial." End quote. Although Babaji Maharaj always strictly forbade anyone to touch his feet, once he voluntarily placed them on Sri Siddhanta Saraswati's head and ordered him, "Preach the absolute truth, keeping aside all other activities," thus concerning his disciples' life mission. So, after some time, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he executed severe austerities, and particularly after the departure of his father and his own Diksha Guru, he became somewhat morose, thinking about his condition. Although he had commented on 8 of the 11 verses of Anuvritti, a further elaboration on Srila Bhaktivinoda's Piyush Varshini Vritti Gloss on Srila Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamritam, which he was composing on Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's specific order, he ceased working on it. He lamented, "To whom shall I show my articles and books? Who will take pleasure in my writings and encourage me to continue? Who will take pleasure in hearing about the preaching work and the increasing splendor of the Dham and our service to it?" Practically foregoing food and sleep, he remained engaged in intense bhajan, while wrestling with a dilemma. His heart reverberated with Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's order that he not renounce service to Mahaprabhu. And seeing the mass of people spoiling their valuable human life, simply taking birth and then dying without information or interest in the incomparable boons offered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was unceasingly contemplating the need to preach. Yet, having experienced the kind of malicious opposition he would have to face for speaking the truth, he was reluctant to return to public life. Then one day, a gust of wind blew before him an extract from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, wherein Lord Chaitanya instructed Sanatana Goswami to compose transcendental literature, renovate forgotten holy places, institute service to Lord Krishna, and propagate bhakti rasa. Taking this as a divine indication, but feeling depressed and incapable, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati pondered, "I have no public support, nor wealth, learning, or the intelligence required to awaken interest in the populace. How can I convey to the inhospitable world the pure teachings of Sri Chaitanya and establish the monopishta of my gurus?" This is a concern that replicates itself with every generation in Krishna consciousness. Everyone has to deal with this. We can learn from his example. Shortly after this, one night at the Yogapit, in a dreamlike revelation, he saw approaching him from the east the Pancha Tattva, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, and numerous other great devotees of Lord Chaitanya. They told him, "Saraswati, why are you worrying? Begin the task of establishing Shuddha Bhakti. Distribute Gauravani universally. Expand service in Gaur-nama, Gaur-dhama, and Gaur-kama. With unbreached enthusiasm, broadcast Bhakti Siddhanta. We are eternally with you, ready to help. The support of unlimited people, immeasurable opulence, and boundless scholarship awaits the blessing to serve your mission. All will manifest when required. Come forward with full strength to distribute the message of Mahaprabhu's Prema Dharma throughout the globe. No worldly hindrance or menace will be able to obstruct this undertaking of yours. We are forever with you." The next morning, a few young disciples who had gathered around him saw, for the first time in many days, his face effulgent with happiness. He related to them the vision he had seen. Before long, he resumed working on anuvritti, and thenceforth, his avidity for preaching was fully rekindled and unretractable. We know something of the history of Gaudiya Math. He preached very vigorously between 1920 and 1930 especially, and established so many mutts throughout India, and in fact even overseas as well. It was a great struggle on many occasions. There was certainly opposition as well, as we've heard already. Maybe we can find an excerpt about this to read. He built a big center for Gaudiya Math, adjoining the Ganga at Bagh Bazar, Kolkata. The complex was envisioned to be a far more opulent and sizable structure than the previous one, with all facilities and accoutrements suitable for a dynamic and prominent religious movement. The location was of great spiritual significance, as evidenced by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's repeatedly stating during a visit to the building site, "Mahaprabhu must have blessed this place with a touch of his divine feet. There is no doubt about it. On the way from Varahanagar, Mahaprabhu definitely stopped here on the bank of the Ganga and performed Sankirtana with his associates. Speaking thus, he became overwhelmed by transcendental emotion. Sri Bhakti Saranga Goswami conjectured, "This is probably why this land remained vacant for so long. Otherwise, there being so many available plots in Kolkata, how has this one become the site for the new mutt?" All classes of people, there was a great festival to celebrate the opening of this temple also, once it was created. We can get a sense of the tremendous success of the Gaudiya Math by hearing the news reports. On 12th of October 1930, the Liberty reported, "On Sunday the 5th of October last, the streets of North Kolkata were scenes of record procession on the occasion of the new Gaudiya Math construction in Bagh Bazar. Devotees from different provinces in India, Bengal, Assam, Bihar, Orissa, Madras, UP, Punjab, had been pouring into Kolkata for days before the ceremony. Since Sunday morning, sympathizers and disciples began to gather at the premises of the old Gaudiya Math, and toward noon, its surroundings extending up to Circular Road and Maniktola Junction presented a view of a vast sea of heads. Hundreds of Sankirtana parties from different quarters of Kolkata and the suburbs, varieties of concert and band parties joined the procession. The Sri Vigrahas of the Gaudiya Math, Sri Gaur Vinod Anandaji, preceded and followed by congregational chant of the holy name, mounted on a most sumptuously decorated car, Ratha, and began moving at 2:30 p.m. amidst deafening shouts of Harinam by the vast multitude in unison with the devotees of the mart. Conch shells were blown, various kinds of music began to play. Veda mantras and selected Sanskrit hymns were being chanted and concurred with the sound of Sankirtana. It seemed to rend the skies as the car rolled on the instance of Paramahamsa Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, Acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, preceded and followed by innumerable devotees with flags, festoons, silver rods, and silver spears. The procession was about 2 miles long, and the whole city seemed to be in a tremor, and it was a sight for the gods to see." The Gaudiya described this event. "Today the city of Kolkata has become stunned. Everyone left his daily work meant for maintaining his belly. When the tumultuous sound of kirtan was heard on the streets of Kolkata, all the people were attracted, left whatever they were doing, and came dashing into the street. The devotees accompanying the chariot were singing a paean composed by Srila Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, especially for the occasion. Matala Harijana Vishayarange Pujala Ragapatha Gaurava Bhange Brahmalo Chari Bhoga Chinmaya Bhange Dhaulo Pati Pati Bhakta Shange Charalo Paraghara Archita Gange Bujhalo Rashanite Nachato Dhange." Although apparently absorbed in material affairs, Hari's own people were actually worshipping on the spontaneous path and thus broke the mood of reverential worship. Having rejected mundane enjoyment, they wandered in spiritual Bengal, running on roads with other devotees. Giving up another's house and worshipping the Ganga, they danced gracefully with understanding of the workings of rasa. So he also sent disciples to various places in India and even abroad to preach Krishna consciousness. Great achievements he made in this way. So, gradually, a few years later, in 1936, he disappeared from this world after writing so many volumes of invaluable Krishna conscious Katha, Vaikuntha Katha. One of the prominent characteristics of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that is often emphasized is his sense of what he calls, well, what Goswami also called, Yukta Vairagya. He was not at all of this world and not at all inclined even to accommodate those who were, but he was not at all interested in shrinking from the world either. He directly engaged with the world and all the things of the world, but in a completely pure and dedicated spirit of pure devotion. There's a section here about this, his preaching in general. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati inherited the urge to preach from his father and mentor, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Energized by the Thakur's vision of Shuddha Bhakti diffusing throughout the globe, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had an unrelenting drive to deliver Shuddha Bhakti to all jivas in the universe and even to those beyond it. He wanted to capture the whole territory of Maya and convert it to Krishna consciousness. He could not tolerate that there be any place devoid of Krishna bhakti. Not restricted within the cultural horizon of Bengal, he wanted to annihilate misconceptions at all levels in all cultures of human society and implement full-fledged theism. This is a quote. Full-fledged theism everywhere. Even though seemingly impossible, he took it as his duty to spread Shuddha bhakti by all means and at any cost. To establish Lord Chaitanya's mission, the fetters of caste, ritual, and indeed all pre-existing stereotypes and dogmas would have to be demolished. Hence, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati inevitably became a revolutionary. His efforts were concentrated in a Bengal where Gaudiya Vaishnavism had lost its original dynamism, and from the ethnological perspective had transmuted into yet another component of the vast heterogeneous mosaic known as Hinduism. Although widespread, Vaishnava Dharma was enveloped by a thick fog of nescience, having become synonymous with artificial shows of ecstasy, mantras imparted for money, flesh-eating devotees, cheaters competing to be lauded as avatars, Siddha Pranali, initiation for the asking, and descriptions of the amorous pastimes of Sri Sri Radha Krishna bandied about like cheap market gossip. In this way, Prakrita Sahajiyas had infected the movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu into a foolish and immoral travesty of Vaishnava Dharma. Srila Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had to reestablish the genuine parampara, which had all but vanished. To purge the Gaudiya lineage of impurities, he publicly decried ecclesiastical and social conventions that were suffocating Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sampradaya. Animated with the heroic spirit of Hanuman in opposing Ravana, Srila Saraswati Thakur committed himself to a lifetime of struggle against the beneficiaries of the rotten status quo. Preaching meant fighting. Although Indian society had traditionally been deeply religious, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati insisted that mere theocentricity was not sufficient. Thus he openly criticized beliefs and practices held sacral by most Hindus, such as impersonalism and demigod worship. With unfaltering determination, he uninhibitedly cudgeled various misrepresentations of Vaishnava Dharma, business in the name of religion, casteism, atheism, Western cultural chauvinism, sensualism posing as spirituality, and innumerable forms of opinionative and deviant philosophers, whatever fell short of pure devotion to Krishna. This was in accord with the intrinsic purport of Srimad Bhagavatam, which singularly among scriptures established the topmost understanding of the Supreme Lord and the individual soul's relationship with him, and expounded dharma prochita kaidava, complete rejection of religious principles that are selfishly motivated. Holding that every word of Srimad Bhagavatam outweighs any other opinion, past, present, or future, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati likened all religious processes, save that given in the Bhagavatam, to jars of poison with a little milk floating on top, and compose a distich on the based on Bhagavatam's rejection of motivated religious practices. Prithivite jata katha dharma nama chale Bhagavata kohe taha paripurna chale. That means Bhagavatam states that whatever in the world is passing as dharma is actually wholesale deception. Needless to say, he made enemies. Particularly, he focused, as it's already been written, he focused his energies on Bengal, East India in general, especially Bengal, and on the Sahajiyas, as well as the caste Goswamis, both of whom were engaged in exploiting their so-called followers. So he ran into problems with them. In fact, even on occasion, there were attempts to take his life. That's generally what any religious reformer has to expect. Here's another aspect of his character, which is salient. It seemed that Srila Saraswati Thakur knew an infinite number of Kshatriya verses, and from them he would cite profusely, especially when establishing points raised in conversation. In various situations that arose, he often referenced pertinent verses and then explained them to the devotees present. Similarly, when visiting holy places, he would recount from memory appropriate Kshatriya verses and elucidate them. And it was not uncommon that while lecturing or discussing, he would extemporaneously recite long segments from Chaitanya Charitamritam or entire Bengali songs. Among Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's most frequently quoted verses was Lord Chaitanya's quintessential Trinadapi Sunichena Durodiva Sahishnana Amani Namanadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. From Gita, he often cited the verses beginning Prakrite Kriyamanani and Sarva Dharman Pratyajya. Among the Sanskrit maxims that were mottos for Srila Saraswati Thakur's life, two of his favorite were Samsiddhir Haritoshanam, that is, the perfection of existence is to satisfy Lord Hari, and Kirtaniya Sadaharihi, always chant the names of Hari. Time and again, he cited Srila Rupa Goswami's succinct definition of Shuddha Bhakti, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavratam Anukulyena Krishnanushilam Bhakti Ruttama. One should favorably render transcendental, loving service to the Supreme Lord Krishna without desire for material profit or gain through fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. That is called pure devotional service. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also gave much importance to another key verse from Srila Rupa Goswami's Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, recommending that it be framed and constantly viewed while unceasingly performing Harinam. Ataha Sri Krishna Namadi Nabhavet Grahyam Indriyaihi Sevon Mukhehi Jivhadau Swayameva Spuratyadaha. The name, form, quality, and pastimes of Sri Krishna are imperceivable to materially contaminated senses. To a person inclined to his service, which begins with a tongue, his transcendental name, form, quality, and pastimes are automatically revealed. He often quoted this shloka to stress that only by a service attitude and by no other means can Krishna be approached. Similarly, to warn those proud of their sensory or noetic acumen that empiricism is based on a fundamental epistemological mistake, and to establish the futility of attempting to essay the unlimited through the material faculty of puny brains, he cited verses such as Mundak Upanishad, Nayamatma pravachanena labhya nametayana buhuna shrutena yamayivaisha vrnate tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vivrnate tanam swam. That means, the Supreme Lord is not perceivable by expert explanations, vast intelligence, or even much hearing. He is obtained only by one whom he himself chooses. To such a person, he manifests his own form. There's so much more here, but the time is running out. These are just a few aspects of the character of this great Vaikuntha man, as Srila Prabhupada called him. He was sent from Vaikuntha, as we've already heard. His father prayed for such a empowered preacher, and he got what he prayed for. So, one thing that we can see that is especially vitally always relevant for our own Krishna consciousness, we see this in Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we see this in Srila Prabhupada, and we should see it in our own lives as well, is that he had such absolute faith in his spiritual master that he was provided all the strength and all the facility that he needed to do the wonderful accomplishments that he actually effected in that service on the basis of his faith. Yasya devi para bhaktir yatha devi tatha gurau. This is literally the last word of the Shweta Shatara Upanishad. One has to keep equal faith in the spiritual master and in Krishna, and to that person all the imports of the Vedas are revealed. He received the instructions from his father. They were confirmed by his spiritual master. He carried them out. He transferred them. He disseminated them far and wide. He gave them to Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, with the same faith, executed the same mission in his own way a generation later, and now we have the same responsibility to continue in this way. Faith conquers. So, I'll stop here. Does anybody have any comments or any questions? Yes, Krishna Kshetra Maharaj. I think we have a microphone.
Disciples Valid is Guru Maharaj was present, or is there a period of a gap there?
Yeah, regarding your second question, I'm skipping large segments of the book, just kind of randomly focusing on aspects that I thought were salient, and yeah, there was some context was missing for that. By that time, he had already begun his preaching work under the direction of his father, and he had actually begun something of the precursor to the Gaudiya Math. You know, he had begun some nascent preaching efforts in the Mayapur area, Kolkata area. So he had some followers, but it wasn't anything like it became between, say, 1920 and 1930. Regarding your first point, we find throughout our scriptures the examples of devotees and how they surrender and how they're challenged. One of the famous quotes of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is that those who would take up this path of bhakti will find their path beset with thorns. And this is something that we practically experience. You don't have to just read about this in the books. This is just a fact of daily existence in Krishna consciousness. When we're trying to fight the illusory energy, we can expect that we will be tested. One god brother, Dev Amrita Maharaj, he gave a nice analogy. When you're trying to break out of the prison, you can expect that immediately all the resources of that prison are going to be focused on you. And they're going to be trying to stop you. So Maya is the authority here, the attakshini, we might say, of this material energy. Durga means fort. You cannot get out or in very easily. It's not going to be easy. There are going to be challenges. Srila Prabhupada had immense challenges. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had immense challenges. His father, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, had immense challenges. He could not even find a copy of the Chaitanya Charitamrita in late 18th century or 19th century Bengal. What kind of challenge is that? Imagine if all of Prabhupada's books were gone. What would you do? So every generation has to go through this process, and every generation has to equip itself with this faith that I mentioned. Vasudev didn't read the script. He didn't know what was going to happen. All he knew is that I have this newborn child, I have to get him out of this prison because he will certainly be killed here. What was he thinking when he came to the raging Yamuna River in a rainstorm? How am I going to cross it? We all have to do this. Nobody knows what's coming at any point, but we know that it will be a challenge. When we rise to that challenge through applying our faith, then we are immediately elevated to that same level. At that point, Krishna will reciprocate. We can only imagine what kind of realizations Srila Prabhupada had after he came to the United States and after he started to establish in a very solid way the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We can only imagine. In some places in his books, we find some purports where he actually hints at this. What kind of reciprocation he was getting from Krishna. So we have to step forward ourselves, as Prabhupada said. When we take one step towards Krishna, Krishna will take 10 steps towards us. That's always, at least that attitude is, I think, a healthy one. We should consider that at least in the initial stages, then we have to take the initiative by demonstrating to Krishna what is the situation of our faith. When we do that, he will certainly reciprocate. He always does. Always. Never fails. But we have to see how and when. That's up to him. I hope that's not too abstract in general. Is this satisfactory? You want to comment anything further? Anyone else? Any questions or any comments? Vanabhata Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu, for an inspiring reading. I'm wondering, can you say anything about the austerities Srila Bhaktisiddhanta performed, especially the time where I think that
in Vrajapatana.
How many years?
10 years. Chanting Harinams. It's here. It's in this book. Exactly where in the book it is described, I can't say because I didn't prepare for that. Here we go. It's written here. During 1905, at age 31, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati took a vow to chant daily at least 3 lakhs holy names, and monthly at least 10 million, until he had chanted 1 billion names. Raise your hand if you've ever made a vow like this. Anybody here ever done this? Okay, one person. Gopal has done this. All glories to Gopal Prabhu. Not an easy thing to do. Not an easy thing to do. He chanted on a Jap Mala given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who had himself used them to fulfill a vow of chanting 1 billion holy names. Srila Siddhanta Saraswati's Shatakoti Nama Yajna, which he performed before a deity of Lord Chaitanya, lasted just over 9 years and 4 months, and was punctuated by much struggle and several colorful incidents, including attempts to oust him from Mayapur. Yet he was determined to continue service there no matter what. There's a footnote here. With 16 names in one recitation of the Maha Mantra and 108 recitations in a round, 1 lakh of names are chanted in just over 58 rounds. However, a lakh of names is generally equated with 64 rounds. Chanting 3 lakhs of names daily had been the practice of Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur, and that example was considered the ideal of Nama Bhajan to be aspired for by practitioners of the holy name.
So that's somewhere over 150 rounds?
Yeah. Lugpug 150 something rounds. So if it takes you, you could just do the math, how long it must have taken him. Sri Siddhanta Saraswati cleared an overgrown area of the Yogapit and made a grass hut. Grass hut. Anyone ever lived in a grass hut? Some people. In which he lived from 1905 to 1909. Have you lived in a grass hut for 4 years? No. Okay. Amid his many books and manuscripts, in concord with Alankar Shastra describing green as expressive of viraha bhav, he preferred to use green items. Interesting. Green items. For example, wearing a green shawl in winter and writing with green ink. He wore only plain unstitched cloth on both his upper and lower body, using neither shirts nor sweaters, and gave up footwear, even though his feet would bleed. Once daily, he cooked plain rice in a clay pot and ate nothing more. He slept minimally on the earthen floor of his hut, bathed in the Ganga, and the rest of the time chanted day and night on the same beads Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had given him in childhood, which he used throughout his life in this world. Occasionally he took black pepper to offset the nausea caused by his virtual fasting. In the heat of summer, he would close the door and go on chanting all day and night. Whenever rain leaked through the roof thatch, he sat under an umbrella and continued chanting. Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj remarked, "I see the renunciation of Sri Rupa Raghunath manifest in my Prabhu." While executing his vow, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati also managed the affairs of the Yogapit, wrote extensively, including an elaborate commentary on the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He spoke at length to the occasional visitors who took the trouble to approach that remote spot. Despite living as an eremite, Sri Siddhanta Saraswati was gradually becoming known as an extraordinary ascetic scholar of an uncompromising and an uncompromising exponent of devotional precepts. As his reputation spread, Panditas came from as far away as Puri and Vrindavan to seek his elucidation on philosophical points. Among those who came to inquire from him, several young men found themselves compelled to surrender at his lotus feet. Some of these early disciples remained in secular life, and a few gave up all other engagements to live with him full time. So that kind of answers your question about how he was attracting followers even at this point. This is 1905, 1915, something like that. Is that okay?
So he was, did you say 34 when he started?
31.
31?
Yes.
So until he was 41?
Yeah, about that, 49 years.
And I just have a quick question on something you read before. Did it say there were hundreds of actual Sankirtan parties in Calcutta?
Yeah, that's what it said.
Not just people, but number of parties.
Yeah, that's right. Hundreds of various Sankirtan parties. That must have been a grand event, you can only imagine. In the Rath Yatra of Los Angeles, it performed every year, they normally get about 250,000 people. But that crowd is there anyway. Much of the crowd is there anyway. So, in Kolkata you can do this. In India, at least 100 years ago in India you could do this. Nowadays, I don't know. Well, anyway, we have big festivals here also. All right, it's getting late. Anybody else? Otherwise, we should stop now. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Srila Purushottam Das Thakur Maharaj Ki Jai. Srila Gaur Govinda Maharaj Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi.